Chapter 6 of Duncan's War, so here I go. Torn between excitement and terror, Duncan drove the small flock of eels up the glen toward home. He'd never driven nursing eels so hard. At first, Duncan's heart skipped a beat with every real or imagined sound. Time again, he whirled around, half hoping to see dust rising around galloping red-coated dragoons keying at his heels. On one such spin, he saw only an old bearded he-goat clopping around the edge of the lane. On another, it was only a farmer leading his pony across the road to the pasture. Rounding a bend, he saw a herd of belties contentedly grazing on a sloping pasture. Nearby, a watering pond lay in a hollow where two slopes converged. Suddenly, Duncan felt certain that he heard hoofbeats and a shout from just over the rise behind him. With a nod of his head, he ordered Rudy to drive the sheep off the road, and he vaulted over the stone wall bordered the lane, looking frantically around for a place to hide. He drove into the murky waters of the pond and held his breath. Cheeks bulging and eyes pinched tightly shut, he waited. Even with strong lungs, a boy can only hold his breath so long, and Duncan finally decided that the prancing dragoons might be better than drowning. Spluttering and gulping air, he rose cautiously from the pond. Not 3 inches from his freckled nose loomed a white black face of a beltie, just about to plunge its mouth into the pond to inhale a drink. Duncan gasped in fright and spluttered as he choked on more of the pond. The Belty's eyes bulged with white terror. With a snort and flicking of its tail and stomping hooves of the mud, the bewildered beast turned and lumbered away. After recovering from his own fright, Duncan staggered out of the pond and peered warily through the meadow grass at the road. Not a soul was in sight. Meanwhile, Broody nipped the heels of the slowest ewes, hurrying the flock up the glen. Duncan waited. No soldiers galloped by. His teeth chattered with the cold. Dripping and wet, he crawled out of the meadow grass, and he looked cautiously back down the lane toward the village. What a brave warrior ye are, he scoffed at himself, shaking the water off his hair. He sheepishly looked his way, and that. There stood Thomas McGrone, scratching his head. He stared at Duncan. Duncan felt his cheeks go hot and red. Farmer McGrone had seen the whole thing. Duncan tried to think of some explanation. You're feeling in need of a wheel cool down, lad? The farmer said slowly. Aye, said Duncan. Or perhaps you're needing a bath. The farmer went on, a smile now playing at the corners of his mouth. He leaned on the plow and stroked onto a grin. His shoulders began shaking up and down, and a sort of hee-heeing sound came with each shudder of his shoulders. It grew louder and louder. Finally, unable to contain the accelerating mirth, the farmer staggered in a fit of laughter, alternately holding the sides of and steadying himself with a great effort on the handles of the plow, wringing water off his plate. Duncan wondered if his father would have considered this play acting. Then, breaking into a run, Duncan hurried after Broody and John Kilbride's sheep. He wanted to leave the farmer's daughter of the farmer's laughter behind, and it wouldn't do for Broody to show up without him. He trotted higher up the hills, and his home came into view. Duncan felt a wave of disappointment. Nothing had happened. No soldiers, no furious bounding up on the brae. No scattering of the sheep to be collected later by Broody, while the dragoons took one or two and disclined the difficulty of rounding the flock, rode off, easier picking somewhere else. All in all, his first encounter with real danger proved to be rather disappointment, more humiliation. Late that night, in the Kilbert family, weary and hungry, arrived in their cart. The report was that Turner's dragoons had ransacked their house and, finding a wheel of value, set it ablaze. Theirs was not first home destroyed by the king's soldiers, nor the last, and all remained was sod shell, charred or blackened, unfit for anyone to live in again. But there had been no dragnet, no scoring of countersite, no pillage of the entire village. After all, John Kilbride was not a minister, and poor as they were, Kilbride farm family was not great to catch for a great catch for the soldiers. What good would another pile of threadbare wool cloaks, a long night since worn out shoes, the books and books of Jamie cherished were only good for burning, and no money to have been selling for such sedition writings. So little plunder, no real example to be much such an unimportant people. But Duncan couldn't help wondering if that monster Turner was playing with them as a cat plays with a mouse, bidding time until unrestrained he would unleash the full fury of the king's wrath against the obstinate covenanters that had done with them once and for all. Over the next weeks, Duncan's father, along with the ancient Grier and several other hill-dwelling farmers, helped John Kilbride build a small croft out of sod and stone. Duncan and Jamie cut a dry heather from thatching and helped gather brides were not only family who sought refuge in the Clasterkshaw's hills surrounding Darley that spring. Homeless and weary, still more fugitives came during summer, some with ghastly tales of horror and brutality, some with silent, staring numbness born of anguish and loss. "I'm worried, Sandy," Duncan overheard his mother say to his father one night after all the family were in their beds. "I'd not be turning anyone away from the safety of our wee Glen." Her father quavered with emotion. "But ye can. The more of us there are in these braes," she broke off. "But still, my love," his father said softly. "Oh, but Sandy," she continued, her voice rising, "Maria Henderson and her wee ones just fled to us from the village. Poor Maria hasn't stopped weeping from these 3 days. Turner, all mocking and sneering, shot her man through the head in full view of the wee ones. Then that devil incarnate swine used her very ill, all while her brains locked in horror. She nor they will ever get clear of it, nor I fear I will. Mary, dear Mary, I didn't ken all this," Sandy said, shaking his head. "Sandy, he'll find us," said Duncan's mother, now nearly sobbing. "Turn'll find us and come on with such a terror and woe. I canny bear I to think on it." With a rising lilt and a quaint of her despair, her voice trailed away. "Mary, Mary, 'tis evil indeed," said Duncan's father tenderly. But my love, we're not alone. And then, soothingly, passionately, his voice rose with the lines from the Psalter. Duncan imagined his father stroking the auburn waves of his mother's hair with his big hands as he sang. God is our refuge and our strength. A present aid. Therefore, although the earth remove, we will not be afraid. Unto the ends of all the earth, wars into peace he turns. The bow he breaks, the spear he cuts, in fire the chariot burns. Be still, I know I am God. Then the psalm singing ended. His father continued, Mary, my love, it's been said that duties are ours, events are God's. What a broken vessel like Turner might do in the future is none of our present concern. The devil would be kicking his heels in glee if we chose to worry about the future at the neglect of doing our duty to our neighbors. Growing numbers of them that there be, doing all in sweet name of Lord Jesus. Be still, my love. Be still. So that was chapter 6. Bye, guys. See you later. See you later. See you later. See ya. See ya later. Bye, guys.